right, and welcome to another episode of Two Guys, One Level, a place where two guys talk about all things gaming. I'm your host, Tortuga, accompanied by Pixel.
And welcome back, everyone. Got a lot to talk about. A lot of Baldur's Gate conversation. And of course, got to touch base with Tortuga and see how he fared over at Dragon Con.
Well, what do you want to start with?
Let's start with Dragon Con. What was that like for you?
Fantastical. As always, it's a huge nerd party, 5 days in length. Fared well, was only hungover 2 times, so, you know, and I walked out unscathed, so no complaints. But it's always a good time. There's plenty of YouTube videos out there now that kind of captures the essence of what it is, but it's just so many things balled into one. You can't just say that Dragon Con is this or Dragon Con is that. It's just, it's a little bit of everything, and it's its own thing at the same time.
Oh, that's pretty good. I'm sure you saw a lot of costumes. I think you mentioned you even bumped into a listener over there.
Yeah, more of a buddy, but I had no idea that he listened to our podcast at all. So he actually let me know that, you know, that he enjoys our content and what we put out there. So that meant a lot to hear that from someone on the ground. Good to know that we're not just talking into air and it just stays in the ethos forever.
Even if we were, as long as I get to talk to you, that's all that matters.
Facts. That's the only reason we really do this.
Well, that's great, man. That's great. And I know you mentioned you had a couple things that were not Baldur's Gate. So why don't you lay me on with some of that?
So some really cool topics that I think is worth discussing. And we've mentioned it in the past, but I just wanted to give it a little bit more love. Now, correct me if we spoke about this already, but I don't think we have regarding AI. Now, I've said it before, and there's many others out there that agree to this, that AI is the future. There's no hiding from it. There's no running from it. There's no avoiding it. It is going to be the way technology is going to advance. It's just the next phase in our technological advancement. AI is going to be included in just about everything that we do. Eventually, it will be incorporated in everything that we do, and not just the technological parts, but every aspect of our lives will be affected by AI. I truly believe that. That said, I'm not the only one who thinks that. The CEO at Ubisoft, whatever his name is, has made a note, or just mentioned in an interview, that they're looking to using AI to kind of help out in the game development arena. Essentially, he said that they're looking at AI to help with like those NPC quick lines, one-liners that as you're walking by kind of things. And they're going to use AI technology to essentially gather all the data and all of the experiences that you as a player have gone through. And the NPCs around you will like react accordingly. So if you're becoming a more known hero, they'll react in that aspect. Or if you're playing closer to a villain, you know, they'll react closer to that. And it's going to add more of a, what's the word? Starts with an I. My brain this morning.
Are we looking at streamlined or kind of like...
Literally says starts with an I.
In line,
that's not how that works. It doesn't matter. But it's just gonna, yeah, interactive, but that's not the word. But it's gonna be just a better experience for you as a player. Immersive, that's the word, and okay. More immersive experience. And because essentially, and it's coded in right now. Usually there's a meter sometimes hidden from the player, sometimes shown to the player, like in Mass Effect, you can see where you are on the Paragon and the opposite Renegade. Of the Paragon, Renegade, thank you. And you can actually, so things like that. And to help with just, you know, just quick one-liners and quick NPC reactions. And I think that's pretty neat. I think it's a great idea. A lot of people are worried that AI is going to completely take over the writing space and the creative space. And I think in some areas it will. Like the brainstorming part of it, I think AI is going to take over that. But overall, you're still going to need a team to weed through that and pick out actual ideas that will actually sell. But I think, yeah, I think we're entering a new era in the gaming space and all technology as a whole. So it's really cool that, you know, someone leading out there is thinking of using this. And I think it's great. I think it's the right move. I think we should start incorporating it now. And I appreciate the transparency and letting us know that they're moving this way, because a lot of people feel that they shouldn't, because it's going to take away jobs from people that, you know, whatever AI is going to do, we're not going to need as many people as a whole, but we're still going to need people in general, but not as many. So it's a controversy in its own right, but I still think it's a great move.
I'm going to agree with you there. I'm a little concerned because, as we know, corporations are going to corporate for sure, right?
Yep.
So I know it's like, soon as EA handles this, at least 7 studios are going to close down. So I don't know. And then Ubisoft has also kind of been having a decline in their games, and upper management has not been handling things very well, from the sexual harassment cases to their NFT projects. It's been a bit of a downfall for them. So if they can manage it, you know, that'd be great, but we'll see what comes of this.
True. And one of the other things that he mentioned was that moving towards, or giving AI basically the control of just those quips, we'll call it, for NPCs and just background stuff, allows the writers to focus more on the story, and they don't have to worry about, you know, the trimming the edges, so to speak, and they can focus on the meat and potatoes of writing and creating a better story, which in my mind, that makes perfect sense. But we all know that's corporate speak for, we're going to cut a lot of people.
Right. You know, I mean, I'm sure that's going to be great for anyone who's doing AI or machine learning.
Right.
Any Python writers is probably what they're going to be using. But, you know, like I said, who knows? This is really going to be a wait and see. The tech is great. It really has the opportunity to really improve the quality of life for for the gamers themselves, and then of course for the devs. If that is something that they can take off of their plate, then it'll definitely help them focus on mechanics, story, and things like that. So anything that they can automate would help anyone who's doing any manual stuff immensely, because there's just less that they have to do from that aspect.
Right. And I agree with you 100%. I still think it's cool. It is still dangerous territory. We really need to tread carefully. I do agree with a lot of people out there saying that we need to regulate AI now before something, you know, happens, any number of things, right? If we can regulate it now and provide a safe operating environment, it'll help kind of bring everything together for the most part, as the technology with how it's used by the people. I'm going to transition over to one more AI thing, and then we can move over to Baldur's Gate, which I know you're itching to talk about. Similarly to basically what Disney does to everything, Take-Two has removed a mod for Grand Theft Auto 5, because this mod specifically uses AI. Essentially, it allows you, the player, to speak freely, as you and I are doing right now, and the NPCs around you would react accordingly and speak coherently using, and would react back and forth to the back and forth conversation that you're having using AI. Take-Two was like, nope, we're going to cut that, and completely pull that mod from existence.
Did they mention why they removed this particular mod? Was it just because they used AI, or is because it's better than anything that they've put out?
It's probably a little bit of both. From what I saw, a little bit from the article that I read, this mod was amazing. It was done incredibly well. And I think it improved just your experience with Grand Theft Auto 5 so much. And I honestly feel that Take-Two took it down because they felt threatened by this technology that's out there. Maybe it's something that they're including in GTA 6 and this was conflicting with that. Or I don't know. Yeah, honestly, they didn't say why Take-Two didn't. They just said that they didn't want it out there. So they did a cease and desist. And the modders obviously cooperated. But yeah, it happened.
I just spoke that entire time. Jesus Christ. Okay. It's kind of funny you mentioned that because I saw something the other day where Ubisoft actually just delisted Assassin's Creed Black Flag. Like out of nowhere.
Like from their game store?
Oh, on Steam. It's just gone. You can't buy it on Steam. And it's very interesting that there's like no replacement or anything like that. It's the only one that you can't buy. You can't buy 3 because they want you to buy the remastered version. But it's just very, very interesting that there was just nothing about it, nothing. There's like a game breaking bug. We're going to, you know, remove it for a while, something along those lines. You just can't buy it. So if you wanted to buy it, then you're kind of up a creek without a paddle.
Oh, that is very interesting. I wonder if they're doing that because they know it's the better Skull and Bones.
Bro, you are not wrong. I've mentioned it time and time again. Pirates are just not a subgenre I really enjoy. Muddled through it for Black Flag. But I will say the ship battles were definitely improved upon from Assassin's Creed 3. Really, really made fun in Assassin's Creed 4. But those are just ship battles, you know, doesn't necessarily have to be about pirates.
Right. Yeah, no, that's a curious thing. I haven't seen anything. Yeah, it's one of those things where this is where you want your corporations and just the PR team to be very transparent when they do things like this, because it's a very curious thing to do. Maybe they made a public note out there that we just haven't come across, but it didn't make any big waves to make headline news. But yeah, that's a very curious thing for them to just do there. It's just moving silently in the night. Very interesting.
Yeah. And speaking of removing things, I'm going to just jump at the ball. Yeah, you cool with that?
Let's do it.
I have like two kind of things. So, over at Gamescom, there were a lot of rumors going around for Nintendo and the Nintendo Switch. And apparently there was a very, very hush behind the scenes demo that Nintendo offered for the what people are dubbing the Switch 2.
Right.
And it seems that the rent must be due over at Nintendo, because what did they use for the demo on the Switch? That Matrix Unreal 5 demo.
Wait, what?
You remember the Matrix Unreal? Yeah. That's what they use for this Nintendo Switch 2 demo to show what it's capable of.
So it was able to, they were just showing that it's able to handle that that incredible engine, that is Unreal Engine, on a handheld device.
You got it.
Wow. I'm impressed. Yeah.
The rent is due. The rent is due, man.
Nintendo stepped up. But why? This is very interesting because what we said this before. Nintendo has always been able to get away with the fact that they make subpar handheld devices because of the fact that none of their games require that much processing. We're not creating incredible, in-depth, realistic, like 3D models of anything. It's almost always very cartoonish. Mm-hmm. So why are they doing it? I mean, I'm not complaining. Clearly, they're trying to get into the same space of being able to, whenever they have the borrowed licenses, like with Skyrim, Starfield, I think, Baldur's Gate, things like that. Not that Nintendo has any of those, but I'm saying that they can get these borrowed licenses to have these on the Nintendo store and play them on the Switch. We've seen that with specifically Skyrim. They put that on there about 3 times, I think. And it's not the best experience. It's an experience, I guess. So I'm wondering if that's why they're creating a very beefy handheld console. Or maybe it was the fact that the Steam Deck was like, why isn't the handheld consoles powerful already? And then they just went ahead and did it. And Nintendo was like, oh, well, I guess we now have to keep up with the competition. It could also be that.
I mean, think about it. Think of what's been added on there. So While these games are just slightly dated, they're still pretty
resource heavy on
the, right. So we have The Witcher 3.
Yep.
Was one of those. They added Doom Eternal. They added, while it's cloud-based, imagine what they could have done if, you know, for Kingdom Hearts, when they added Kingdom Hearts to the Switch, instead of having a cloud version, they could have just had the, you know, the memory space. It's the same thing with, you know, they have Call of Duty coming out.
Right.
It's a 10-year deal with Microsoft.
That's true. And it could be that. Honestly, I could see something like that happening between Microsoft and Nintendo saying, hey, we want to give you these things, but we really don't want your crappy hardware keeping people away from buying Call of Duty on your console. Like, what's the point of us giving you access to that when people aren't going to use your device to play this game because you can't keep up with the competition? It could honestly be a conversation like that. And then Nintendo's like, don't worry, the next Switch 2 is going to be able to handle these kinds of graphics. I could see something like that happening too.
Right. And remember, that's what Sony was complaining about as well, that Microsoft was just going to ship over an inferior game on their platform.
Right.
So if that was a concern on the Switch getting some sort of cloud version of Call of Duty, this will be something to kind of put them at ease to, hey, we have the hardware here. Because I think we're on the NVIDIA DLSS, I think we're on 4.
I don't know, bro. They keep adding random acronyms with numbers like nonstop. I don't know what NVIDIA is doing. Something out there. Yeah, sure.
So the Switch is apparent. This, you know, Switch 2 allegedly is going to be using DLSS 2. So it's definitely a step up in performance. You know, for ports especially. But yeah, man, they started it off with the Unreal Engine 5 Matrix demo that was out. That's, I think, like a year ago.
Wow. No, that's super impressive. Let's see what they can do, because the biggest challenge that all these handheld devices have is going to be the battery. That's really going to be the thing. Is it going to last more than 5 hours? Because that seems to be about the average. If it's less than that, it's cool that it runs great. But for people on the go, if it's not running at least 5 hours, it might not be worth it, in my opinion. Right.
And, you know, and it's like 5 hours. How? Like, do you have to have your brightness at zero? No audio.
Yeah.
You know, so it's definitely something to keep an eye out. And just because it's been a while and I love to torture Tortuga.
No.
So Cyberpunk.
I knew it. Cyberpunk
2077 is getting what's being dubbed their 2.0 release in a couple of weeks. So as we know, we have the Cyberpunk Phantom Liberty expansion coming on September 26, 2023. It's the only expansion that's going to be coming out for the game, very likely because of the negative attention it got, because I'm sure they had a bunch more on top of multiplayer when this happened. So apparently this update is really going to revamp that full experience massively. So it is coming to the update itself is coming to the game, whether you get the expansion or not.
Okay.
So, you know, it's supposed to really give you like a fresh experience, but no one really knows exactly when it's going to happen. People are kind of estimating it's going to be about a week before. The game is supposedly going to revamp, you know, a bunch of systems within the game, improve the police response. They're going to redesign the skill trees. They're adding vehicle combat, which is pretty cool. Just a couple things. And, you know, of course, Phantom Liberty is going to add that, plus a bunch more, you know, new areas to explore, weapons, characters, quests, and things like that. Whether you're getting the expansion or not, you are getting that 2.0 update, which actually might make me see what's up and purchase, see what changes are they adding. So very curious to see how it goes. I saw like a really quick brief trailer, and the thing that I was looking forward to the most was actually more the vehicle combat, because all the vehicle combat in the base game was usually with someone else driving, and I think they're changing that up where you can now shoot and drive, which is crazy because that game did not have the best driving mechanics. But you can also use like your cyberware like on the vehicles.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So
the concept is great, but their execution was terrible. I'm sorry. There's no getting around the fact that they dropped the ball on that genre. That space was, from as far as I know, untouched, and they tainted it. So it's just, I don't know. It sounds like they've done enough where it'll warrant a replay. I buried that game so long ago, I don't really know much about anything of the story anymore.
Crying. Well, there you go. The perfect time to pick up a new playthrough for you. You know, after you get through your fifth playthrough of Baldur's Gate.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Because Baldur's Gate is so damn great, and Cyberpunk has a lot to learn from it, that I'm willing to talk about Cyberpunk for the rest of the episode now.
Cyberpunk or Baldur's Gate?
I said Baldur's Gate. I don't care what you heard.
Okay. So Baldur's Gate, fantastic experience. I have a couple things to touch on before we get on our what I guess will be our review of it. So Larian doesn't want to put a date on it, but they are actually working on crossplay. Which is very, very surprising. We know from previous titles, multi-platform games, that Sony does not play well with others. Right. But so we have cross saves at launch. So if you'd have to buy the game twice regardless, but you can pick up your PC playthrough. And if you wanted to game on the couch, you'd have to use your Larian account to do it, but you can log in on your PlayStation and just pick up, it's like Xbox Play Anywhere, but from Wish. and then they are working on the cross play now, where you'd be able to play with, any PS5 friends if you were inclined to do so. They don't want to put a release date on it, but they just want to let us know that it is in the works. And I think that's great, because it'll definitely save me from debating on purchasing the game a second time. Yeah, where I can just play with my buddies who've been wanting to play with me, and just play, right from my PC anyway. So I'm okay with that. Another piece is, do you remember Minthara? No.
No.
Names. She's one of the three bosses in the Goblin Camp in Act 1. She's the Paladin Drow. Yeah.
She had a name?
Yes, they all do.
they always called her the Drow, so I've never heard her actual name before. But yeah, I know the Drow.
Yeah. Okay. apparently there was a bug that got rid of like 1,000 lines of dialogue for her. 1,500.
Oh, wow.
So you could have like legit have like full conversations with her, maybe not even fight her at all. But on top of that, apparently she's also even a romance option.
Oh, that's curious.
That's very curious.
That's an interesting, I wonder what choices, you obviously would have to play as a believer of the absolute and fall into their good graces in that case. But honestly, I didn't even know that you can have the romance option with characters that weren't in the party to begin with. So that's very curious.
It is. It's very curious. So one thing that kind of bugged me is how even when I first did it, that whole thing felt incomplete to me. And I couldn't quite place my finger on it. And apparently there was a bug that was just not, like, I could barely even converse with her.
Yeah, I never had any type of conversation with the Drow. It was always, oh, there you are, straight combat. I've never had dialogue with the Drow in any of my playthroughs.
Yeah, so, like, there we're talking, like, right, so the bug to start was blocking off, like, dialogue from her, as well as, opinions from your other party members about your decision to start a relationship with her.
Interesting.
So it's like, if your approval with her is high enough, apparently the romance can progress to Act 3. But then it's like, there's so many actions there's so many paths that are dependent on that goblin camp. Like, I don't think I've done a playthrough where I didn't murder everyone in that goblin camp. So I'm just kind of curious. And, making it to try to be as spoiler-free as possible, you need an instrument to bring to you to Act 2 in my playthrough. that she has. So it's like, how do you get it without being a bunch of murder hobos?
Yeah, I mean, it may be, and this is what makes Baldur's Gate so great. We may just have to do a different playthrough where we ally with the Goblin Camp, which, you know, I think by default, most people are not going to do that. But just to see how the story changes by having them around, I'm very interested in that.
Yeah, like, I don't think this is spoiler free. I'm sorry, I don't think this is a spoiler. But so you have a Druid camp and a Goblin camp, and each one wants to get rid of the other. So I think most of us are gonna go the normal RPG route and save the Druids, because they're technically the passive ones here. You know, they're the defenders, not the aggressors. But it is interesting because there's also a band of tieflings that are at the Druid camp, which also progress in the game. So it's interesting.
But for all we know, there could be a dialogue option because we allied with the Goblin camp where we fall in favor and say, hey, will you mind if we let some tieflings cross towards Baldur's Gate and you guys don't attack them? Like, that may be an option because, you know, they're like, all right, yeah, sure. If you want them to live, we'll do you that favor kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. I mean, who knows? There's so many dialogue options that miss out. Like, I've had some conversations, strictly paladin responses, and strictly barbarian responses. So right. Who knows if there's more, I don't know if this is spoiler free. The Illithid, there's extra powers you get by expanding on that. So yeah, I wonder if by joining with the Absolute, if that's also going to open up additional dialogue, because usually you can only use it like once or twice per long rest, it feels like.
There's a lot that come up in dialogue options. I never do it, but maybe there's just a playthrough where you just dive into that part of the story, because that in its own right is it's a path that has a story that unfolds the more you dive into quote unquote the dark side, right? So it's a very curious, and this is what makes Baldur's Gate 3 so damn great, is that there's just so many ways to play the game. You can replay the game and almost an infinite number of times. You will almost always have a different experience every time. They just did such a fantastic job. Honestly, it makes me want to just jump into another playthrough right now and just dive into the dark side. Just to see the differences. Honestly, just to see the differences. Because right now in my main playthrough, I'm in Act 3. And it's so challenging. And I come up across certain like dialogue or just fights. And then I'm here sitting. I'm like, I clearly missed something along the way. Because I feel like this should not be as difficult as it is if I'm actually supposed to be here at this point in time. It always feels like I'm either under-leveled or under-favored with the people I'm dealing with.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean. I had a what was it? It was a conversation, and like I legit just could not make heads or tails of it. Like no matter what I did to try and pass, just wasn't happening.
Yeah, so I don't know. They did such an amazing job. I remember reading an article. Basically a quick summary of an interview that they had with the CEO. And essentially it was around the data of essentially, you know, how does he cope with the fact that there are things in Baldur's Gate 3 that have either yet to be experienced or explored because the right actions haven't been chosen. Like, the, you know, they roll out a specific code if a very specific set of things were to happen. Right. And either there's a lot still in the game that either no one has or very small, like under 50 people have experienced playing this game, because you have to do things in a very specific way to unlock it. And his response, I think, was great. He was like, I think that's fantastic. I think that's what makes Baldur's Gate 3 Baldur's Gate 3. And it's one of those things that if you were to be a corporation like Microsoft, the next time you were to make the next game, you would pull out that data and say, whoa, there are over 500 things that was experienced by less than 100 people. We're not doing that again for Baldur's Gate 4. We're going to cut that kind of thing. And he's on the other side of that. He's like, no, that's what makes this game so great, that you know that you can do things out of the ordinary and be rewarded by something that very few people will have the experience to find, because you took the initiative to go out of your way to do something specific, something different that made your story unique, your playthrough unique. And that's just, it's just one of those things that I think should be recognized and respected, because I think that's great.
You know, you're absolutely right. And, you know, we've mentioned it before, like one of the things that really makes the game shine is the fact that there aren't any investors that they need to appease.
Right.
From an investor
standpoint, you would make that argument. Like, why are we spending thousands of hours coding and writing and perfecting things that only 100 people are going to experience, only 500 people are going to experience out of a million? Like, it's not worth the time. Like, the return on investment on that is not worth it. From an investment standpoint, that's 100% true. But from a gamer's perspective, it's not true. It is so worth it. Even if only 100 people or whatever experience something very unique, I think that's great. I think that's because then when you're having a conversation, hey, when you talk to this NPC in Act 4, did you choose X, Y, or Z? And then we respond, I didn't even have those types of options. Like, how did you even get, you know, it opens up that dialogue IRL with people to try to make that, to reenact that kind of experience. I don't know. It's just one of those things that I think we need to incorporate more in games. It's not even an Easter egg, but it feels very Easter eggy, but like you earned it kind of Easter egg.
Right. Yeah. And then it just opens up so many avenues. It's where you cross into the conversation with people. Like what's a big thing with games nowadays? Like where is the replayability of your game, you know, especially when you consider single player games. Multiplayer mm-hmm. games have it easier because there's content that they can add. There's people who only play PvP games. There's DLC, you know, and it's for whatever, from FIFA to Call of Duty to Halo. That's where a lot of people spend a lot of time. Even Fortnite, unfortunately, has part of the conversation. Because they have been going strong with their content. Epic has been putting in that effort with Fortnite, again, from the battle passes that ruined gaming. They updated from Unreal Engine 4 to Unreal Engine 5 for everyone. That was just a totally free upgrade to the game. Mm-hmm. Granted, they're bringing in probably like $1 billion a year, but it's still a lot. You know, when you look at it. So when you have like a single player game, like I love much older game at this point, but Prototype 1, things like 2009, Grand Theft Auto, you know, San Andreas 4 or 5, you can only play those games so long, right? Because it's a relatively linear path for those games. You know, granted, with these open world games, you have that option to fuck around, do what you want. You don't have to go to the story if that's not what you want to do. But with Baldur's Gate, from beginning to end, you can play this game 5 times and have 5 different experiences, bringing us back to Dragon Age, Mass Effect days, you know, early BioWare. And it could be with the same exact character, same stats, and just by failing a dice roll or accidentally killing an NPC, choosing the wrong thing in dialogue, you can make the same barbarian, the same ranger, the same sorcerer mm-hmm. 5 times, and again, just 5 totally different playthroughs. So that's something that I think is definitely going to allow for the longevity of the game. On top of that, if you're a PC player, there's mods galore as well that you can also look into modifying your game. So Baldur's Gate 3 really is adding so much for it. And even with the minor things that we touched on, it doesn't even come close to our experience, because Tortuga and I both have our first, we'll label our main character that we're going through, but we're also playing a game by ourselves, you know, well, I'm sorry, together. And that one already, there's like dialogue options that I've never gotten before, or
cutscenes. We've had cutscenes together that we've both didn't experience in our main playthroughs.
Yeah, and it's like, what?
Yeah. Like, I'm like, what? When was this added? I mean, it's great. I'm glad I get to see it, but like, how did I miss this the first time? It's just, yeah, it's very interesting. And it's just one of those things, even playing with people, because you can trigger a conversation and I can just jump into it and basically get to watch like a cutscene or a movie. And I have zero input. This is you playing your character, reacting to how the, what the NPC is saying at that point. And I think it's great that we can just dive in and enjoy that together. Or I can go and do my own thing and have a conversation on my own while you're doing that, and literally just have two characters, because that's what they are, experience the world while they're doing their own thing. And I can't tell you how many times I've started combat while Pixel's out and about, you know, exploring. Nothing wrong with that. And I probably shouldn't have been doing what I was doing. And then he has to stop what he's doing to run to make sure that I don't go down or die or make the game even harder, which I've done many, many a time.
Tortuga is very, very much combat oriented in Baldur's Gate, which is fun. It is fun, but there have been quite a few deaths that have happened with the or checkpoint reloads. What was it? The wargs, I think, were the first ones, right?
Yeah, very avoidable death is the thing. It's just, I don't know. This playthrough is just, I'm just going around I'm testing all the limits just to see what I can get away with. And apparently the answer is none. So.
Crying, bro. Oh, that's funny. Probably my biggest thing in Baldur's Gate, I would say, is it feels like there's a lack of items, like armor and weapons.
I don't think so. I don't agree with that.
Weapons not so much, but like I want named items. Like, I don't want plate armor plus one. I want the burning crusade of Azeroth, you know, as like an armor or something. So that's probably like my biggest gripe when it comes to items. Other than that, it's very cool how you get class actions or like even spells. There have been like a couple of like hoods that I've found that have been pretty cool. I think it's weird because my character is so large. But that's really like the biggest thing. I do hope they roll out the, not the respec, but the, what do you call it? Like the character creator, that you can do it like mid game.
You can.
Not yet.
Well, it depends on what you mean by character creator, but you can change your class right now.
Right, the respec, you can do that with this, but they're like your look and all that.
Oh,
they're working on that update.
Gotcha. Oh, okay. I didn't know that. That's pretty neat. No, I'm not sure I would change anything. I really like both the characters that I have right now. That character creator is fantastic. And just a quick note, just to mention it, I didn't know this because I honestly thought that Baldur's Gate was running on a version of Unreal. Turns out they developed in-house their own engine, and this is what Baldur's Gate 3 is running on, which I think is crazy. Fantastic. It's beautiful. It's an amazing engine. Amazing.
It's something so minor in the creator, but as a Dragonborn, or anyone can really do it, but by default, the Dragonborns have like a flame eye. So it looks like a flame is going on in your iris. Mm-hmm. And just that alone looks so amazing.
Yeah.
So big kudos on that engine, Zilarion.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't think it was in-house. I had no idea. I honestly thought it was Unreal, because I remember thinking, I'm like, how come the Unreal Engine logo isn't popping up in the intro when the game is loading? And then I Googled it, and it's because Unreal had nothing to do with it. And that's just, you know, me and my naivety thinking that Epic is a part of everything because their engine is so damn great, which it is. But Larian Studios, like, we have our own that's just as great. And it just blew me away when I found out. So I just want to make a note of it.
Yeah, no, and it's a great note because, you know, when you look at a lot of companies that use there, so you have whatever the Bethesda engine is that they've been using, mm-hmm. the Take Two using their Grand Theft Auto engine. Mm-hmm. Ubisoft using the, I think they're on Snowdrop now. Like, these are massive publishers that that have that technology to do that, to either upgrade their current engine or just, I think Snowdrop was the newest when the Division 1 came out. So they're able to develop this new technology to avoid paying Epic, essentially, for the Unreal Engine.
Sure.
So for them, for this much smaller studio to do that, it's very impressive.
Yeah, what I'm impressed is that this much smaller studio can go pound for pound with something as big as Unreal Engine. That's what's catching me. It's just, and it's amazing. And this is one of those things, since Larian Studios is a smaller studio and Baldur's Gate 3 was such a massive success. And I have faith in the CEO. So far, I haven't seen anything he says or does kind of make me think that he's going to run Larian Studios into the ground. But everyone knows that when massive change like that happens, when you're a small studio and all of a sudden you got this major studio money coming in, that you now have a lot of room for error. So I hope that they tread carefully. I think they got a good enough head on their shoulders that they'll be able to figure out the next steps forward to make Larian Studios grow organically and still be able to put out amazing content and not sell out to the corporate heads that destroy basically every other aspect in the gaming industry.
Right, because like I mentioned earlier with those investors, I think that was a big part of the Cyberpunk downfall. So if they had to, not only like normal investors, I think they even got like government money as well. I think it was something along the lines of, you know, put Poland on the map or something along those lines. So on top of that, they had to develop for the 7th-gen consoles, so your PS4s and your Xbox One. And I think that was a downfall for them. Like, if they would have came out as like a PC only release, mm-hmm. and then did some ports after, I think the game would have been a much bigger success. But that's just me.
Nonetheless, that's a very solid point, because look, Larian Studios did exactly that. They said, hold on, all these other consoles, it's adding too much strain on our dev team to have a same day release for everything across the board. So we're just going to focus on PC first. Then we're going to focus on PlayStation 5, get that going. And then once we're all said and done, we'll start working on Xbox. Because they don't have to answer to the level of investors that CD Projekt Red had to deal with. They are actually able to cut things back and focus on what matters most. They have the freedom to do that because they're not beholden to these other outside sources.
Exactly. And, you know, it's really like a double-edged sword. So, you know, Larian had to do everything out of pocket, but they got to do what they love. So they got lucky with this amazing critical success. I think in part due to licensing from Wizards of the Coast. So people kind of see that Dungeons & Dragons name and you're going to get a big flock.
Automatically. Like, it's true.
I know people who definitely have at least dabbled in the tabletop that are like, you know, I got to check this out. And they're loving it. You know, they have a campaign going. There's people there's DMs that I've seen that are bringing in the Baldur's Gate 5 story to their tabletop.
That's awesome.
It's an unfortunate pulse, but you know, Cyberpunk also has like tabletop, right? Cyberpunk Red, which is kind of where it originated. But there were people that were like, you know, how can I get something like Cyberpunk Red, but compare it to Baldur's Gate? It's like, buddy, come sit down. We need to have a talk.
Yeah, I did see a thing. I was like, does anyone know of a game that's like Baldur's Gate 3 that I can play like a tabletop style with my friends? Boy, do I have news for you.
So I hope you're ready to go.
But yeah, no, Baldur's Gate 3 is great. I'm very excited to continue playing. It's definitely one of those games I've noticed that, much like Elden Ring, as fantastic as that game is, if I don't consistently play it, I will forget what I was doing because there's just so much to do. And since the story isn't exactly linear, it's very hard to just dive back in and say, this is exactly what I was going to do next. And it's going to spend a couple hours trying to get back to where you were. Like right now, if I were to turn on Elden Ring, I could not even tell you what the next boss I'm supposed to be going after.
Bro,
no clue.
My thing with Elden Ring is literally just kill everything. Like I barely know what's going on. Like honestly.
No, and I mean, I do the same thing, but I don't know what my next region boss that I need to go after is supposed to be.
Basically, it's like whatever's not uncovered on the map. That's where I'm at. Like I've been in Volcano Manor for as long as I can remember. Like whenever I had to stop playing because I got so busy.
You know, I can't find my second playthrough.
Find who?
Volcanic Manor.
I can't find the boss in my first playthrough.
The snake, what's his name?
I don't even know who it is. I'm at the manor. I'm like making my way down this mountain and then I just got lost.
That's so funny. Yeah, but it's the same with Baldur's Gate 3. I didn't play it for about 2 weeks and I jump back in. I'm like, I have absolutely no clue what I'm supposed to be doing. But Baldur's Gate 3 does better than Elden Ring is that there's that journal that keeps track of your progression, and that does help a lot to try and figure out what I was focusing on next. But to honestly say that I'm doing what I was going to do when I first stopped, I don't think I am. But it doesn't really matter. It's still a fun game. I'm still dying every other battle because, like I said, I've very underleveled, 100% underleveled. There's no reason why every single one of my fights is to the death. Like, I always die to the death.
Oh, okay. I have been getting more combat heavy. So, you know, as a paladin, you gotta go with the oath. Like, I don't think I'd be able to honestly do an oath of devotion. Like, it'd be so hard to, like, pick those. So I went with oath of vengeance. So in case I, you know, do a little murdering. As long as it's for my goal, then my deity won't be too mad. I do want to check out that Oathbreaker though, so maybe I will give it a shot.
I love the fact that you can't just pick Oathbreaker. They might change that, but I love the fact that right now you can't. You have to pick an oath and break it, and then become an Oathbreaker, which is exactly how it's designed to be, right? So I love that they included it in that way, and I also love that they took so much creative freedom with this game. They didn't exactly stick to the D&D rules, and they basically said we're gonna make this feel more like a game than more so the tabletop. Like we're gonna take everything that is a part of the tabletop and included in the game, but it's going to have very much game-like mechanics, and I love that.
Right, exactly. You know, there's I think like certain spells and items, like you know, most magic items and, you know, let's say magic weapons in Dungeons & Dragons, they usually come like with a trait or a perk or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But here, like mentioned earlier, you got a two-handed axe, basically. And it gave me a paladin. It gave me the option to cleave, which is a normal. But if I switch it over to, I think I have another longsword, then I'll lose my cleave action, but then I'll gain like a rushing one where I can close the gap, do damage. I can't even explain like how great it is for you. So you don't have to deal and just use like the same weapon through their whole game. Like it really gives you the option to switch up your playstyle a little bit.
Yeah. And it also makes every weapon feel unique. And it's not just you add something to your inventory or repertoire and it just increases your damage by a little bit. Like it actually makes that weapon style feel unique now because you're using something completely different.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, I agree with that because Baldur's Gate is great.
It is great, and it's just it's not just a thing. Like the only person who doesn't talk is the main character if you create a custom one,
right?
Other than like some quips while you're like running around, but as far as like dialogue goes, your main character doesn't talk. But if you know, there's been times where I thought that it was you know, my character, you know, initiating the dialogue, and it'll go to like Shadowheart. And she'll have like the conversation, like she would, she'll actually like talk, and it's God, it's just so great, you know, from the dialogue options and just overall, like splitting the party. Like I can, I can like just legit just split the party, go roam by myself without having to send them over. It's actually super funny. I just went to Steam right now to see where we are with the reviews, and it's like all-time reviews. It's like overwhelmingly positive going back to early access, and like you're like the first review here. Nice period.
because they won't let you put a thumbs up unless you have a words in there.
That's funny. My brother-in-law is like right under you as well.
That's funny.
But it's just like there's people who like really put their heart and soul into these reviews to like, you know, positive, negative. And it's we looks like we have like 300,000 reviews under Baldur's Gate 3. And for it to still hit overwhelmingly positive with like 200,000, 270,000, like that is an accomplishment.
Yeah.
And it's just so much. Like there really is so much. It's the animation, the combat animations, the coloring, the dialogue. It's just
And the story is so good.
The story is good. Like it's refreshing to launch a game and experience it without
and know it's actually gonna launch.
Exactly. You know, like sure they had 3 years in early access, but that's what it took for them to launch it like this.
Yep. Yeah, they were very transparent throughout the entire process. Like, hey, we can only move this fast for what we want to put into this game is going to take X amount of time. And I know they pushed it back like, what, 7 or 8 times, the date. They just kept pushing it. And then the last one, they were like, all right, we're going to push this a year from now. And I know that's going to piss everyone off, but trust us, it's worth the wait. And they were right. It absolutely was worth the wait, but it sucked knowing that the first announcement was like supposed to come out like 2-ish years ago or something like that. And we just had to wait every time. We're like, oh, we got bad news. We got further, but we're going to have to push it 6 months and 3 months and 3 months and 6 months. All right, we're just going to do a whole year from now. But at least they kept their word on that last one.
They did. And they truly, truly...
delivered.
They did deliver. That rent must have been due. I'm telling you, they need that money. And a lot of the reviews that you'll come across is something along the lines of, I don't normally buy early access, but I want.
To I definitely don't. Not. Yeah, I definitely don't. But because I love D&D so much, and from what I saw from the little bit that they revealed with early access, I'm like, it's worth it. And honestly, we put in a lot of hours in early access.
We did.
There was just so much to do. And I love the fact that we played early access that much. And when the official game came out, there was enough changes that I honestly didn't feel like I played the game at all yet.
I was the same way. Like I'm going through like something. This is something so simple, right? So one of the first characters you meet is the Githyanki Lazel.
Right.
And she would basically, you would walk a bit. And right before like another section, she would jump down, you'd have a conversation, you'd fight some imps and you call it a day. And then you kind of keep it moving. Like here, she does like a whole backflip coming down, has all the flair of a bard.
Her Batman capes come out, lands.
Yeah, it's crazy. Her jet flies away. It's like out of control. But it's something like just like that, that alone change the trajectory.
Right.
Like what's the same at the starting area? There's the brain that you can get, and then the final fight. But like everything else feels pretty new. Oh, and then the Shadow Heart.
Yeah, and they added so many ways to save Shadow Heart in the beginning that was not there in early access, which I think is awesome. It's just they did. Yeah. And they said it too. They said we changed a good chunk. I think they said they changed about a third of what people would remember from early access to the official. But I feel like it was way more than a third. They changed so much. You don't deal with those fishermen trying to pull out the mind flayer anymore. That got pulled. I haven't seen that. And I always felt that was such an awkward fight because you didn't really have much of a choice. You just had to kill these three people because
you could break the spell.
What? Anyways, you just kill these three people.
Welp.
But they completely pulled that from the official game. I haven't seen it, at least. I don't know if you need to do something else for that. But, you know, things like that. There's enough changes in there that completely just changed the experience in Act 1. And I can definitely say that I have not fully explored Act 1 to its fullest. Neither in the early access nor in the official game release. Like I maybe at best 45 to 50% of what's in Act 1. Because I have seen some content come out of what people are doing in Act 1, and they're holding weapons that I didn't know existed. They're in combats that I didn't even know existed. You did combat until we did our playthrough together that I had no idea was available to us, just because you did a lot more exploring than I did in the Goblin Village. And you mm-hmm. discovered this just completely hidden area in the Underdark. And I'm like, I had no idea any of that was there. And I can only imagine how much more I've missed because I didn't do such an in-depth level of exploring, which is why I love playing the multiplayer with you, because you're showing me things that I 100% miss. And I don't know if I'm doing the same for you, but I would like to think that I've shown you things that you've probably missed, but probably not, because you're better exploring than I am. I just go for the kill.
Crying. No, you showed me the doctor.
Nothing.
I missed the doctor completely. I had to like search. Like I was almost done with Act 2 and I had to like go and search for the doctor.
Oh my god, that fight.
Yeah.
Oh, that was a tough fight. But it was fun. It was so unique. He had very interesting mechanics. And I get to play this game as a player and as a DM, right? I get to look at this as, how can I take elements from what I'm experiencing right now and translate that into a tabletop version? There were mechanics in that doctor fight that I was just looking at it like, this is beautiful. This is, what is it? Mad genius, evil genius level of mechanics that you're just throwing into this fight. Like, this is horrible for the players, but it's incredible as a DM to just be able to play. I'm obviously avoiding what the mechanics are so that you can experience it for the first time if you're listening to this on your own. But it was evil, but it was great.
That's pretty hilarious. I have to remember that you are definitely looking at the game as a gamer and a DM as well. And then I don't think you're participating in any tabletop games at the moment, right? You're just DMing.
I'm DMing, yeah.
Yeah, so that's like a completely other set of eyes. Like, I already know something happens in game. You're like, write that down.
And honestly, in a lot of, there's been some things that I figured out ahead of time. Well, yeah, I kind of figured out, guessed, and I guessed correctly. As the story unveiled, I'm like, I freaking knew it. Like, when I found out who the actual antagonists were, I knew from the beginning. I had an inkling of what they would be, and I was right. And I was so glad that I was right, because they did such a good job with it. And yeah, I look at it from the DM perspective, and because of that, every NPC I meet, I don't trust immediately. I don't care how nice and cute or funny you're being. I'm like, you're trying to kill me.
Auron got me like 3 times.
Who?
One of the guests, the female guest. She tricked me like 3 times.
I have no idea what you're talking about. But that's a very common DM trick up their sleeve kind of thing, where they bring someone awesome and then they just backstab the party. It is a common trope, and I'm here for it.
That's pretty fantastic. Yes, as spoiler free as I can think, Dungeons and Dragons Baldur's Gate is a beautiful, beautiful romance.
Yeah.
From the gameplay itself, very turn-based. I've been looking for like a good turn-based games. I've tried a couple of these indie ones, and the last one that I truly enjoyed was Child of Light, and I think like 2016 or something. You know, they've done some of the Final Fantasy remasters, which was okay. But I needed something a little more, and Baldur's Gate definitely scratched that itch for me. You have amazing voice acting. The voice actor for Astarion, he's actually doing a Let's Play, I think on Twitch. So he's like playing the game himself. The romance is good. The combat animations, like I still can't get over how much I enjoy how the spells look, like just how they look.
So beautiful. That definitely changed from early access.
Indeed. No, that was definitely a big upgrade. You know, like when you're selecting a spell, your character will do an animation, kind of like prepping the spell.
Like as you're hovering it. Yeah.
Yeah. And then when you execute it and then you see like full motion of it.
Yeah.
I cannot get over how much I love the lighting. There's you can
like
play
the shadow play. Like when you cast a shiny enough spell, like the shadows as the spell is moving react accordingly. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to jump in, but I get what you're saying. It's so good.
It is. It's just great. And we touched on it on a previous episode, but it's like there are developers and publishers coming out like, hey, Baldur's Gate 3 is great. Don't get your hopes up because of how much they're putting into. And again, a lot of that comes from, you know, the profit that they have to make. They have to, yes, they have to make money for their employers, for the company, but ultimately it's the investors who need to get paid out so they can keep investing.
Yeah, that's the true relationship that they don't want to break is the relationship with the investors, not with the consumers, not with the employees, with the investors. And it's such a grotesque way to operate. Corporate greed has never been the answer and it is poisoning so many things, but that's a conversation for a different time. But touching on the element of how developers were saying, hey, Baldur's Gate 3 is great, but this is not the new standard when I think it should be. Brings to light Starfield, because Starfield officially released. And apparently, some people were upset that Bethesda made a Bethesda game.
So I've been seeing a lot of that as well. I don't know. I was expecting a little more space-ish. I was expecting something a little more Elite Dangerous until I remembered it's an RPG in space, not a space sim.
Right. And but I don't think they've ever made Starfield feel like it was supposed to be a space sim. They've always said it was going to be an RPG, which is why I didn't understand the backlash. I still don't. Of why people are shocked that Bethesda made a space version of Fallout / Skyrim. They've been making the same game since forever. They've never changed the formula, only the skin. I was still excited for Starfield, knowing that because of the space part of it, because I think it's awesome because of, you know, what we experienced with Elite Dangerous. It's great. You get a spaceship, you get to fly to planets, you get to explore planets, and apparently not entirely, which I think is bullshit. That part I didn't like when I found out about that. But for the most part, it's the same thing. It's a very self-exploring type game. There's enemies, you shoot things down, you keep exploring, you get materials, you build things. Like I'm describing everything Bethesda's ever put out.
And it's good. And I actually saw they got help from some internal studios and Microsoft itself, which is probably why the game is as polished as it is.
Funny.
but I have not experienced any real bugs yet. I know.
Bro, when do you ever?
Okay. All right. Whatever. I said yet. But something that was cool that I blew my mind completely. Basically like a robot is kind of like the first companion that you meet. And on your way to like the first main quest, you have to meet a group of people. And, you know, he called me by my name. He was like, you know, all right, Captain Steven, like here we are. And I was like, wait, what? Completely threw me off. And apparently like right before starting the podcast episode today, I came across that there's like an entire list of names that he's able to say.
That's funny.
So it was definitely super cool. Definitely caught me off guard. That was not expected. There was another game that was expected to do that, and I don't remember what it was. But basically, it was able to use your name as well. I think it was supposed to be The Division.
That kind of sounds right. Don't worry. Once AI takes over the gaming industry, everyone will get that. But yeah, it's I still don't understand why people were upset about. I don't know. Maybe it's like you said, you thought people were thinking it was going to be a kind of a space sim, but I don't recall them ever saying that it was going to be a space sim. They just say you will be able to explore space, which is true. I don't know if fast travel is a thing. I'm sure it is. It's been a thing in everything else that they've made. But I feel like flying through space in quote unquote real time, going from the ground into the sky, into space, and then doing it in reverse as you go landing on another planet. I think that's awesome, which is what I'm looking forward to. Can you at least confirm that that's part of the game?
It doesn't have the BGE2 flying animation. So when you get to your ship, you like launch, it does like a little animation, and then there's a loading screen, and then you're in space. You don't even get to like fly around too much. Like, it doesn't feel like you're actually moving, to me personally. Maybe it's from playing Elite Dangerous. Like, it feels more like you have your speed, just like Elite. You know, you have all those meters, you have the bars to like allocate your resources and stuff like that. Okay. But mostly it just feels like you're turning and like aiming and then shooting. If you go to another planet, it's just a loading screen. It'll set it up like if you're going pretty far, you know, it'll do your hyperspace jump animation, and then that's kind of it. There's not a lot to it. It's really more point click, and then you arrive where you're going. To a planet, it's you select where you want to land, kind of.
Interesting. Yeah. And not terrible, but great.
But to be honest, like I personally have not spent like any time in space. Like, I'm still like on the first or second planet.
Interesting.
Like, I just like a side mission that was really good. I signed up for like almost like a military kind of thing. And they're
I'm sorry, I just remember that Bethesda does that. They create like four or five factions. That all have a relationship already with one another. So befriending one faction means that you're becoming an enemy of another, and maintaining that balance is almost impossible. It's very annoying, but also very enjoyable because it's also good fun.
Yeah, that's kind of where we are. So, you're labeled as a captain already. So I think they already hold you at like a pretty high level, like just across the board. So like when I did it, like they was like, hey, you know, this is a pretty, pretty low level. Like, you don't have to do this.
That's awesome.
But then you're like, oh, you know, whatever. Like, I just picked it up anyway.
I'm just curious. Does the character you're playing have voice lines, or is it
pointing? Like Fallout 3.
Got it. All right.
Click, yeah. When I got to this place, what was supposed to be, you know, just, you know, check on these people, make sure they're okay. Like, the entire outpost was like murdered, except for like one person. And there was like, there was something going around that like killed everyone. And apparently it's a pretty big threat in the game. But it was like the light, like Reapers. It was like, basically, that's what it felt like. I think it was like a dark planet, or it was nighttime when I personally got there. So like, it felt like I was playing a horror game. Like, I was not playing Starfield. Like, I was like, what is this? I should not be this scared right now. But it was great. It was honestly like really, really cool experiencing that. If you do decide to jump on it, you might as well get it on the Xbox whenever you do decide to get your new one.
Okay.
Because I think it's like locked at 30, but I really can't tell the difference. I don't know. I like it. Like, I've accustomed myself to Fallout 4 and Skyrim on the keyboard and mouse. But I definitely wouldn't mind it as a console game, because that's how I also did Fallout 4. I think I did console. So it basically plays the same as that. It was the same mechanics. You know, you're hidden, you're hiding, crouching, stealth, all that good stuff.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I'm definitely going to play it. I just can't. I can't start that until I finish Baldur's Gate 3. There's no way. Those two games are both 100 hour plus each. To get kind of the full experience, there's no way that I can play both simultaneously. So it's going to have to sit on the back burner for a while. I'm in Act 3. I believe there's 5 acts total, if I'm not mistaken, for Baldur's Gate 3. In each act, it gets not significantly smaller, but apparently it gets smaller than the act before. So it shouldn't be that much more left to go. So I'm past the halfway point, essentially, in Baldur's Gate 3. So yeah, once I'm done with that, I'm definitely going to pick up Starfield next, and I'll be able to give my 2 cents of what I think of the game. But yeah, I just saw so many articles complaining about Starfield not being Starfield being too much like Fallout and Skyrim, and I don't know why people thought that wasn't going to be the case. Bethesda's name is on it. Everything they make will always be like this. It'll have that bar on the top with the direction of where you're going.
Actually, that's actually a big complaint.
It's there or that is not there?
That is not there.
It's not? Not even on the field? On the planets?
No, there's...
That is a complaint.
There's a you have like a little mini map, and no. you get like a dot on like
no direction.
There's a lot that's like I was in this market in one of the cities doing like a little quest, and like
that doesn't make sense, because I remember in one of the one of the gameplay early access, whatever you want to call it, things that they showed, it had the thing on the top. The directional map HUD thing.
Yeah, nope.
So they scrapped it. That's crazy. I hope a mod fixes that.
Is that time to get it on PC?
Yep. I need it. I mean, I don't need it, but come on. It's
I'm pretty. There's kind of a way around it, but it's still like I was like lost in this market. Like I really had to like run around and like look at the signs
like where funny. To go. That's pretty funny, man. I can't believe they took that out. That's actually kind of crazy. It's kind of like a staple at this point with anything with anything that they make. Wow, huh? I don't know how I feel about that. Not happy is definitely
a way. I don't go anywhere without Google Maps. Like I don't know how they expect me to go around all these planets without my Google Maps.
It's interesting.
But
I mean, I wonder if it's because there's no northwest, southeast in space, like that only applies once you're on planet, which is why I at least thought when you were on a planet that would pop up.
No, there's kind of like a scanner that you can pull up to kind of to kind of gauge like where to go. Like you still have like your objective, you know, dot or whatever that's on your mini map and on like a main screen. Yeah. So you basically have to like go around.
That's crazy. Wow. Well, Starfield just waited 2 months instead of 1. That's wild. Well, like I said, I still play it. I still think it's going to be good fun. Apparently, it's not as Fallout or Skyrim as I thought, minus the faction part of it and the million sandwiches.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, you have your weight, you have your... people don't really like the HUD and like the menus, but I don't mind them at all. But it's very similar, regardless how you cut it out. It's the same formula they've been doing for 25 years. You have your quests, you have your side quests, you have your factions. We're just in space now. You know, the Elder Scrolls 5.5 star.
Sure. And I'm here for it. I knew that's what it would be, and I'm here for it. Trying to save on time, even though it's going to be one of our longer episodes. Did you catch the 7-minute gameplay of Payday 3?
No, but I know what they're coming with. I think I just saw their roadmap. Payday's fun. It's a fun game. So I'm sure they're just going to improve upon that.
It looked so good. 7 minutes of just pure chaos. It's out there on YouTube. Definitely check it out if you haven't. It looks great. It honestly looks like Payday 2 with better graphics. I mean, what more can you say?
Payday 2 is phenomenal. I can't be mad at that.
Yeah, Payday 2 is phenomenal. There's more, not quests, more missions. There's more heists. I think there's more weapons, more tech. So it's basically just an upgrade to everything that's Payday 2, and it doesn't look like they kept anything that was in Payday 2. It looks like they ported everything over. The same things that you loved in Payday 2 looks like it'll be in Payday 3. This might be a day one for me, not necessarily to play it, but just to own it and have it ready to go. Because this is definitely one of those games that you're going to want to play with people that you actually know, because it's good fun. It's absolute chaos the entire time. You start off stealthy until someone does something, i.e. me, that triggers the triggers the guards, the alerts, with the alarms, whatever, and just puts the game on 6 stars out of 5 difficulty. It's just, I'm ready for all of that. Payday's is such good fun. Yeah.
You know what I'm surprised that you haven't brought up, is we're coming up, as you mentioned, I wanted to think of like what games I'm looking forward to. Like I might get Spider-Man, but I'm not even 100% there. I might wait till that goes down. The Metal Gear Solid Master Collection Volume 1 coming out. But for you, we have City Skylines 2 coming out in October.
Oh yeah, I mentioned it when it was talked about in what show it came out on. I don't remember the show, but yeah, no, we talked about it, the episode on that. City Skylines 2 is on my day one list. That is a very mind-numbing game, and the videos that I've seen from it, holy shit. It is crazy, the advancement between City Skylines 1 and City Skylines 2. It honestly looked like this should be like City Skylines 5. Like, this does not look like a part 2 level of progression to City Skyline. It looks like we jumped ahead like 5-6 versions of City Skylines. I'm here for it.
You haven't really seen anything like this since SimCity. And the last time that EA did SimCity, it was a complete failure, like back in like 2013 or something like that. So I feel like this is a very good version of that, and it improved on so much. And you don't have to give EA money for it. So I think that should be
a bullet on every game that comes out ever. Does EA have a part in this? No, EA gets no money from it. Worth it.
Worth it. That's boom. Funny. Here's a $10 tip.
Yeah, no, City Skylines is definitely on my list. It looks so good. Everything that I've seen so far on it, they did such a good job. I wasn't even expecting it. I thought City Skylines was just going to stay as it is forever. I never expected a sequel. I'm glad that there is. I just never expected that there would be a sequel for City Skylines.
Yeah, I mean, but I'm glad for it. Like, I'm glad it's seeing that success. Because there's also a company, I haven't been keeping up with them, but my wife has. And she said that they're basically going to be a competitor to The Sims. Because of how disappointed people are in The Sims. Yeah. So I forgot what it's called. I'll try to get you the title off podcast. But it's looking pretty good, according to her. And, you know, she's been playing since like Sims day one. You know, she's one of those people who bought all those expansions as came out. So she's excited for it. And like the community, the Sims community themselves are excited for it. Because of all the limitations that they're putting on it. Like I think they already have inklings of Sims 5. People feel like Sims 4 isn't even complete.
Gotcha. Damn. Well, that's pretty crazy. I mean, it'd be cool because competition always drives innovation. So, I'm very curious to see how that's gonna play out. I like it. The only Sims I've ever played was Sims 3 on the OG Xbox, Fat Box, way back when. So that's my only experience with it. I mean, I had a great time with it. Yeah, I had a great time with it.
Because though the console versions were atrocious to me.
All right, Elite. That's the only thing I've ever played it on was the OG Xbox, Sims 3, I want to say. Maybe it was Sims 2. Sims 2 or 3. All I remember was playing chess with a rooster. So...
Okay. Oh, actually, you know, I completely forgot to mention this. But remember, if you wanted to give it a shot, you could just get like a month of Game Pass and you could check out Starfield because it is a first party.
Hey, I will do that when I'm done with Baldur's Gate 3.
Okay.
But that's good to know.
That's going to be it for me, bro. I got it.
No, I hear you. No worries. It was a much longer episode than we anticipated for, but Baldur's Gate 3, there's just always so much to talk about with that. And now we have Starfield, another heavy hitter that's out there. So we're going to keep up with that as well. But going to go ahead and sign us out. Thank you all for hanging out with us yet another episode. Definitely check the links in the description below for links to all of our other content. Don't forget, we still have that giveaway going on until the end of September. So if you're listening to this anytime after September 31st, anytime after September 30th, that giveaway is no longer active. But definitely give that a look through. Check us out on Twitter at @2guys1level. Let us know what you thought of this episode, any previous episodes, and what you'd like for us to talk about in any future episodes. Again, thank you all for hanging out with us, and we will catch you all next time. Till then.